hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in the fog that I see. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me.
When you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. That's the name of this program. Sorry, here on altrighttv.com. And so much happening these days, and so many exciting things going on. Of course, I mentioned yesterday that later today I'm going to participate in a demonstration in downtown Toronto outside the legislative buildings. And this is a We Stand With Greece demonstration. And it's to stand to support Greece at this time. And it's really, I think, very important demonstration. and it's standing with the Greek government, the Greek people, because they're standing up to threats from their neighbor, Turkey. Turkey is trying to do something about the 3 to 4 million so-called refugees, many of them from Syria, but not all, that are in Turkey right now. They've fled the problems in Greece and other places in the Middle East. Their goal is to get to Europe, and for a while, the Turks had agreed to close the border and not allow these people to flood across into Greece or into Bulgaria, though most of them are going into Greece because it was easier access. The European Union finally, in response to huge pressure from their own people, prevailed on the Turks in exchange for 4 billion euros. Everything's corrupt. It's not simply let these people traipse across their territory and then invade Europe. Now, this is part of a demographic war. And make no mistake about it. The Turkish government would like to destabilize Europe, and it's part of a war that we've seen before, a war of Islamic conquest. There are other motives, yes, but when push comes to shove, that's essentially what this is. It's a war of Islamic conquest, and the Europeans have not been forceful enough. You know, if they simply threw these invaders back, it wouldn't matter what Turkey did. They are Turkey's problems. I'll tell you why they're Turkey's problems. Because Turkey, almost all these people are Muslims. Well, they're Muslim people fleeing failed states. They should be Turkey's problem or Saudi Arabia's problem. You know, look after your own. Why did Europe have to become the dumping ground for the world, or for the third world losers? Well, just as there are people protesting in Toronto tomorrow to show the their support for the Greeks. Many in Greece are uniting. Here's a story right out of Europe. Over the years, villagers who lived near Greece's border with Turkey got used to seeing small groups of people entering their country illegally. The Greek residents often offered the just-arrived newcomers a bite to eat and directed them to the nearest police or railway station. But the warm welcome wore off. When Turkey started channeling thousands of people to Greece instead of insisting on its ancient regional rival and NATO ally receiving them as refugees, the Greek government sealed the border and rushed police and military enforcements to help hold back the flood. And that's right, that's healthy. Greeks in the border region rallied behind the expanding border force, collecting provisions and offering any possible contribution to what is seen as a national effort to stop a Turkish-spurred incursion. In several cases, authorities asked villagers familiar with local terrain to help locate illegals who'd managed to slip through holes cut in the border fence or to cross the river Evros, or Merik, in Turkish. That demarcates most of the 132-mile border. It's a fairly long border for a small country to protect. In several cases, authorities asked villagers we were born here, we live here, we work here, we know the crossings better than anyone. Panayotis Agaladarkis, a community leader in Amorio, a village that lies some 300 yards from the river banks, and the river's the part of the border. Our other villages have responded to the call for volunteer trackers. Small groups of unarmed men monitor known border crossing points after dark. We sit at the crossings and they come, Agaladarkis told the Associated Press as he drove a pickup truck with a fellow Greek border village resident along a rough track at night. We keep them there most of the time, call police, and they come and arrest them. Then it's a matter for the police. We aren't interested in where they take them. We just try to help this effort taking place by the army and the police. Help for the border units also came from Evros businesses and store owners. Nikos Georgiadis, head of the local restaurant owners association, said his colleagues delivered food and water to units stationed at four points on the border. They also asked for masks and gloves, and we'll try to find some, he said. Agelidarakis said all the illegals he encountered over the past few days were cooperative. These people are frightened. Nobody's caused any trouble. But the village community leader said that in his view, the people he encountered did not look like they were fleeing wars in their own country. There's nobody coming from a war, he said. None of them are refugees. They're all illegals. And that's why they're trying to get into Europe this way. Greek authorities said that of the 252 people arrested for illegal entry over the past week, as of Friday, 64% were Afghans, 19% Pakistanis, 5% Turks, and 4% Syrians. While there were others from Iraq, Iran, Morocco, Ethiopia, Bangladesh, and Egypt. You see, we're told in our fake news media that these people are mostly Syrians. Well, even if they were, they should really be a Turkish or a Gulf State or Saudi Arabian problem. But they're not even that. These are just opportunists, mostly men. Very interesting. People supposedly fleeing conditions in their own country. Usually, the men stay behind and fight and send the women and children on. It's very interesting that these are men. This is actually part of a planned invasion. Multicultural Swedish town becomes hell on earth. A girl and two women tell their stories. Stavanstorp is a small town in Skåne, Sweden. After several violent incidents, the town's inhabitants, especially women, feel insecure. The stories of the people of Stavanstorp went public after the investigative journalist Joachim Lamotte visited the town. Previously, the town was known only for a horrible knife incident for which an Afghan migrant was arrested. In front of Lamotte's cameras, Swedes described the town as dangerous and full of violence, with gangs dominating its public places. One girl tells how she was sexually harassed and punched at her former school every day. They locked me up in the toilet and hit me with bands. They punched and joked on me. It happened every day, she said. Suddenly they came forward and grabbed my breasts. After I punched the guy, the whole family came and told me I'm a little horny and I need to shut up. When I'm out with my dogs, they throw stones at the dogs, she continues, pointing out that she's afraid of what will happen to her siblings and cousins in the future. A woman explains that the affected children urge their parents not to do anything because the Afghan gangs will take revenge on the children. Another woman tells how she was brutally beaten by a gang of 15 people. But during the live broadcast, a politically correct lawyer suddenly comes across and denies the whole horror of Stavanstorp. He says the town is peaceful during the spring. According to the lawyer, it's completely wrong to contribute to hate in society. He claims that Lamoth's website is terrible to read. But one of the girls replies, people need to know what's happening. And this is a real problem. Not just what these illegals, or these people, I guess in some cases they're not illegal, the treasonous Swedish government has allowed them in, but it's not only what has happened being suppressed. one of the problems is not just that this information is suppressed, but even when it's revealed, you've got treasonous elements in Swedish society that want to deny it, that say no, there's not much of a problem. Maybe there's a little problem, but there's not very much. And besides, it's hate. Now notice that weaponized word is used to hurt our own people, and to suppress our own people, this politically correct Swedish lawyer trying to deny that a problem exists, and this is very much the conflict and turmoil we find among European people. You have the basically anti-white race traitors who live in a fantasy world of equality and welcoming and actually looking forward to the day when their people are no more. There's a strange sort of almost suicide mentality among these people. And you know, on one level, I say, fine, if that's what you wish for yourself, if you so hate who you are and what you are, and you wish to go out of existence, well, then by all means, you know, put your mouth over the barrel of a gun and blow your brains out. You might actually improve the genetic stock. The problem is, and this is the terrible problem, their actions undermine all of us. A friend of mine, like me, well, likes to look at the mass media and see what messages our our race traitor elites are pushing at us. Now, here's a picture from a paper called the Niagara This Week. It's a tabloid, and it's there's a section called Family Day Fun. And there's a picture of two people, I guess they're a couple. She is lying on the floor with her head on a pillow, smiling, and he's sitting on the floor beside her with his back against the sofa, smiling, and they both have these little devices in their hands, and they're grinning. They're playing video games. And sitting up on the couch above them is a white dog reclining, there it is, napping. And at first it's not really obvious what the picture's about. It doesn't seem to have much to do with the article. It's obviously not a very typical Canadian family. They look like they're Chinese. So a minority is being pushed at us as the new normal. That's, of course, what our treacherous elites want. The new normal will be where we're a minority. But you see what the couple's doing. Normal, civilized people sit on the couch. Dog usually sits on the couch. A dog usually lies on the floor. My friend brought this to my attention. And, you know, at first it didn't really register. I mean, it wasn't outrageously offensive. But he says, you know, isn't the message that we're all animals? In fact, the animal's in a superior position. The animal, Fido, was sitting there on the couch, probably where the people should be. And this couple is mindlessly enjoying, I guess, some video game. Now, they're adults. In fact, the guy appears to be sort of gray-haired, I guess, in his 40s or 50s. A little old for being playing kid stuff on your TV monitor, I guess. I thought it was an interesting point how even advertising that isn't necessarily racially offensive is in some other way offensive. I mean, those who would control the New World Order are basically not very nice people. here's a flyer from Enbridge. Now, Enbridge is a big supplier of gas for home heating, among other things. Here is a flyer that was sent out in the Southern Ontario. On the front you've got a picture that says, get help to save energy and improve comfort. We've got you covered with free upgrades. They're trying to sell upgrades and so on. And here is a family situation. And there's a mother. She's white, smiling. And she's got a 4 or 5-year-old on her knee, or beside her. It looks as though she's reading to her. Now, the child is obviously a mulatto. It's got kinky hair, brown skin, doesn't look at all like the mother. And then farther in the background is another child, looks like a male, maybe a year or two older than the child in the foreground. He's also a mulatto. Now, mixed race couples are still, thank God, only about 5% of the population. What you see here is quite clearly propaganda. This isn't showing you a slice of life or Canada the way it is. This is showing you what they want us to be and to look like. And then mysteriously, there's another photo inside entitled Energy Savings Made Free and Simple. And there are three people, there are three women. They're all sitting on a couch watching TV. And interestingly, the woman who was the mother in the first photo is there with her two white, I guess, girlfriends or whatever. Here's another flyer. Propaganda flyer from the same outfit. Enbridge. Connecting with our customers is the picture. And there's a family situation, a couple, a man and a woman. Looks as though they're looking at their stove, and he's white. And she's black, perhaps East Indian, or black. But anyway, obviously a different race. Now, there's another picture on this flyer, the CO, aware, that's carbon monoxide. That's a man with a baby, so he's lying there, but baby on his chest, a little baby, very tiny baby. He's a white man, white baby. And on the other side of the flyer, there's another picture, and it's entitled Save $75 on Smart Thermostat Now. And there's a mother and her child, and she looks oriental. So of three pictures, you've got one traditional situation, although it's a little unusual, the man holding the little baby. You know, I guess that's a non-traditional sex role. Not that men don't hold little babies, but they more normally would expect it to be a woman. So that's one. Other pictures, the mixed race couple, white man and non-white woman, probably black. And then third picture, oriental mother and child. If you took this as a slice of life, you would have to conclude that Canada is overwhelmingly non-white. You may be roughly a third white, which in fact that's not the case. Canada is still 78% European, although our numbers are declining in the face of a massive third world invasion. It's important to see how much of our elite, who I'm not going to mince words or try to soft soap it, are traitors. I say that word deliberately, with the full anger and venom that lies behind it. What do you call somebody who wishes to participate in the replacement
and ultimate destruction of your own people. By welcoming, facilitating the immigration invasion from the third world, and by normalizing relationships that will destroy our people. The offspring of a mixed race couple are neither, as the case might be, blacks or whites. They're some sort of weird mixture. And they're not all, and you would say, well, maybe there's a new class of mixed people. Yeah, but they're not all mixed the same way. What about the offspring of a black and, a white and or an oriental mix, or an oriental and black mix? And you can sketch out other permutations and combinations. We
are creating they would like to create a new man that really is nothing. In fact, wasn't that the demon vision of Richard Count Coudenhove Kalergi? And that was the new vision was of a European man who would be, he thought, looked like the ancient Egyptians, and he was wrong, of course. Anthropologically, the ancient Egyptians were white. But anyway, he said a mix of the African and the Asian. Now, he said this in 1920, he wrote this in 1922, at a time when there was virtually no third world presence in Europe. And you have to ask, well, okay, how are you going to end up with the new European man that's a mix of African and Asiatic? Well, at the time, it might not have been obvious, and it sure wasn't shared with people at the time, that this was the demon dream that Coudenhove Kalergi had. But what you'd have to have, of course, would be massive invasion or third world immigration, which, beginning in the 1970s, is exactly what happened to Europe. This is very, very deliberate. And this was the plan. Now, people, B'nai B'rith and others who are also facilitators of this invasion and replacement of the European founding settler people of North America and the indigenous white people of Europe, will say, no, this is a right-wing conspiracy theory. And they would like to conjure up images of a strange fellow who maybe has some sort of a tin cone helmet and a propeller on top of it, and you ask him, what are you wearing that ridiculous get-up for? And he tells you, I'm warding off rays. And you ask, well, where are the rays coming from? Oh, they are shooting them at me. I say, oh, really? Yep. Well, who are they? Ah, I can't tell you. Oh, okay. we've all occasionally, or most of us with a lot of experience, have run across people like this. And they're, in some cases, I think, dealing with some degree of mental illness. And you want to feel sorry for them. But this is not a conspiracy theory in that we are saying that the reality we see going on around us is all perpetrated by them. Who are them? Well, I don't know, or I can't tell you, or they haven't told me yet. No, it isn't a theory. And people like Coudenhove Kalergi and his followers today are quite clear that what they are trying to do is to replace us. That this isn't a theory. A theory is an explanation that is deduced from facts. And you have to reason back to it. And the theory, may or may not be correct. The theory tries to explain how things came about. For instance, there is a theory about the creation of the universe
loosely called the Big Bang Theory, which holds that at some time, millions, perhaps billions of years ago, there was some sort of a huge explosion that fired matter in all directions, and that somehow, and I'm simplifying here, that as the dust settled down to Earth, this matter formed together and became life. That is a theory. That's an explanation for what we see around us. You know, the question is, how did this world we see around us come to exist? Well, one explanation is the religious explanation, or certainly the Christian explanation, that God created the world. God created life. Now, it can get a little more complicated. God created life, but did he create life the way we see it today? Well, the Bible suggests he created animals and plants, the birds of the air, the fishes of the sea, the beasts of the fields, and man and woman. Some people look at the account in the book of Genesis and say, well, it may be that God did create life, but life has changed or evolved over the years, many, many eons. At one point there were the dinosaurs, but they aren't there anymore. Life evolved, but the beginning of life came from God. This world that we see around us didn't just result from a big bang. Now, both of those are theories. The religious one is a religious belief. The big bang theory, I find preposterous. You know, you can take a lump of earth up in your hand and fling it up in the air. 10, 20, 100, 1,000, got enough energy, 100,000 times. And as it settles back to earth, it will never come down as a butterfly, or a bird, or a mouse, or a man, or a monkey. If you wanted to be more creative about it, you could set a stick of dynamite and blow chunks of earth up. Same thing. Do it for hours or days or months at a time. And as the earth settles back, it'll never come back down as a butterfly or a buffalo or a beetle. So as an explanation for the world, for the creation, the Big Bang Theory is a little on the preposterous side. But that's what a theory is. It's an explanation. Now, what intelligent people then try to do is to prove or disprove the theory. Well, that's an interesting explanation. Maybe it's true. So we'll do various things to try to replicate it, as I just suggested about the Big Bang Theory, throwing handfuls of earth up and then see if it ever comes down as a new creature. But the invasion replacement explanation, I call it explanation, not a theory. It's not trying to read into events something. Those who have perpetrated these events, enabled these events, and then will vigorously try to slap down anybody who questions these events, namely the organized, enabled third world invasion of the European heartland and of European lands in North America and Australia and New Zealand. The people behind it are quite clear about it. That for several reasons, they want to replace us and change us. You see, they just don't like us. That desire to hurt, to replace, that is a form of hatred. The very emotion they accuse us of. You know, those of us who are critics of the third world immigration invasion of our country are accused of being haters. You hate. No, I don't hate. And I've known many people from the third world. And I don't hate them. In their own country, they're often quite likable. And over here, in small numbers, I don't have a problem with them. I don't hate them. I don't see a Chinese person on the street and like curls up with hatred, snarling like an angry dog. No. On a personal basis, many are reasonable, decent people. Some are not, but many are. But the question is, being here in huge numbers to replace us. It's not about hatred. You want the best for your own family. For your wife, for your husband, for your children, for your grandparents, and perhaps for your grandchildren. And wanting the best for them, working hard to try to secure that, and working hard on relationships and assisting one another, does not mean that you hate your neighbor or that you hate the family across town or you wish them ill. But your first priority, in a very healthy manner, is your own family. And you know, among healthy people, it's in their genes. It's part of our instincts, our survival instincts, to protect our kind, beginning with our family. And we know the contempt we feel for somebody who abandons their family. And we feel sorry, and particularly sorry, for people who are abandoned. A story I come back to because it's been quite prominent in the whole Native people ongoing narrative in Canada is what happened to a little girl named Tina Fontaine. She's an Indian child who lived on a reservation not too far from Winnipeg, Manitoba, and she was very unlucky in her family life. Her mother, whose last name is Duck. Now, I'm not making this stuff up. Her mother, soon after giving birth to two young girls, skedaddled off to Winnipeg and became a party girl full-time. In other words, she abandoned her own children. I think most people would say that is reprehensible behavior because you owe something to your own family. Well, then the father tried to raise the child, the little girl, the two little girls, and good on him. He was doing the right thing. But once again, bad luck intervened. In this case, it was that he was at some sort of a gathering with several other friends, and these were friends, fellow Indians, apparently with a fair deal to drink, and they stabbed him to death. And after a trial, they really couldn't even give much of an account. Well, why'd you do it? Well, they were very sorry. Okay, that and $1.85 gets you a cup of coffee, but they didn't have an explanation, and this really goes to deep moral deficiency. So now the child has, one parent off partying, the mother abandoning the two girls, and the father murdered. Well, that's a pretty harsh blow. The two girls are then taken care of by a great aunt, who does her best. When she turned 14, Tina began to run away to Winnipeg. She got involved with drinking, with drugs. She was whoring. They'd bring her back to the reservation. She ran away again, back. And by 15, she would be murdered. I think we can all appreciate the failure of those around her, but particularly the mother. And then fate intervened, unfortunately, with the death of the father. And But the natural instinct to protect and preserve your family is crucial. And on a larger basis, that is our opposition to massive third world immigration. We don't want to be replaced any more than you would welcome 10 strangers moving into your house, kicking your kids out of their bedrooms, and you all have to sleep in the basement. And meanwhile, they eat up all the food in your refrigerator. It's not that you necessarily hate these people or wish them harm, but you wish to preserve your family first. Well, that's my sermon for the week. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side. I mean, you've got to play some Scots, Irish, sorry, Ulster Scots, Ulster Irish music. Sometimes they're called the Ulster Scots because many of them came from Scotland. And this was sent to me by Mark and Tina Palazzola in St. Louis. They'd be members of the Council of Conservative Citizens. And hope you enjoy this. This is part of our heritage.
Why I sing so loud, 'cause my Aunt James is home away. She's earning Ireland dollars. American boy with his One evening for pleasure, I rambled to view their fields all alone. Down by the banks of Lochearn, where beauty and pleasure were known, I spied a fair maid at her labors, which caused me to stay for a while. And I thought of her goddess of beauty, that blooming bright star of Bright Isle. I humbled myself to her beauty, fair maiden, where do you belong? Are you from heaven descended, abiding in Cupid's fair throne? Young man, I will tell you a secret. It's true, I'm a maid that is poor. And to part from my vows and my promise is more than my heart can endure. Therefore, I'll remain at my service and go through all my hardships and toil. And wait for the lad that has left me all alone on the banks of Fair Isle. Young maiden, I wish not to banter. 'Tis true I come here in disguise. I came here to fulfill my last promise and hoped it'd give you a surprise. All I know is you're a maid I love dearly, and you've been in my heart all the while. For me there is no other damsel than my blooming bright star of Fair Isle. For me there is no other damsel than my blooming bright star of Fair Isle.
And the song that's from my love to our time.